No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello and welcome again, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the Rise Up, See Red podcast, episode 161. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals from USA Today Sports Media Group. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how is everything going this week?
Good, Jess. I mean, we're finally back to real football, at least being able to have real football discussions and not talking about what's going on at camp. So it's been a fun week, finally getting back into the groove of things and really getting into the blogging on the blogging ship again and really enjoying it.
There's definitely stuff to talk about. The Arizona Cardinals actually began their preseason, kicked off the NFL preseason with a 20-18 loss to the Dallas Cowboys in the Hall of Fame game. I guess it should be notable. I actually didn't mention this in our pre-show plans. We probably should make mention to the fact that Kurt Warner is officially now enshrined in the Hall of Fame with a bronze bust that to me actually looks nothing at all like Kurt Warner. He gave an interesting speech. It was good. We learned a few things that, you know, Trent Green was really important to him. That he had a conversation with Dan Marino on a Wheaties box that sort of inspired him to, pursue his dream as he was working in that grocery store. So the Cardinals play and lose. I mean, it's preseason, so it's not like life or death. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the preseason game, specifically about Blaine Gabbert, who perhaps was the story of the game, especially for Cardinals fans. So we're going to talk about tonight in this show, episode 161, Blaine Gabbert and how he played and his role perhaps moving forward. We're going to talk about the things that we liked and didn't like from the game. We're going to look at some of the competitions that are going on at the different positions of note. And then with the Arizona Cardinals going against the Oakland Raiders at home in their preseason home opener, which is basically preseason game one for everybody else, we're going to look at the things that each one of us can talk about. We're looking forward to in this game coming up. So let's go ahead and get started. Before we actually get into the game, Seth, any takeaways, any comments, or anything that you'd like to reflect on with Kurt Warner now officially a Hall of Famer? If you didn't notice, he represented both the Rams and the Cardinals with his Rams blue tie and his red Cardinals pocket square. So he did a good job of representing both worlds.
Yeah, and I thought it was nice. And I mean, if we're talking about just the history of the NFL, it's probably Warner's legacy is with the Rams, but when we talk about the effect he had and kind of hit the lasting memory of Warner, I think it is, and obviously, you know, it's probably easier to say this with the kind of newer information, I guess, or stuff, but with what he did with the Cardinals. And I think it made everybody kind of remember him as a Cardinal. And I think it was because he had four or five just bad years. I mean, his year in New York wasn't necessarily bad, but I mean, he just had four or five really forgettable years. And I think everybody forgot that 3 or 4 year run with the Rams where he was so dynamic. And then he had that, you know, really two and a half, three year run with the Cardinals where it happened again. And I think that's what makes his legacy so great, is that he did it with to, you know, moribund franchises that really have one's gone in one direction, one's gone in the other direction since he left the teams. But I think it also shows that it's interesting that the Rams took the hit and have struggled to find anything of resemblance to when Warner was there, and they were the ones that kind of unceremoniously ousted him. And the Cardinals in turn were kind of left in a lurch because of him leaving. So the Cardinals were able to rebound, and the Rams are still reeling from that. Maybe it's karma. I don't know, but
well, for me, you know, it was fitting. I thought his speech sort of embodied the type of man he is. It wasn't over the top. It was good. But it wasn't even as memorable as some of the other speeches that were there. However, he ended the speeches. And so he was able to end strongly. And it was, you look at his career, you can't discount either. He was, if you look at in my mind, in terms of his greatness, that his greatness was with the Rams. But what made him a Hall of Famer was his years with the Cardinals, if that makes any sort of sense, is that he played his best football, amazing, dynamic, like elite, God, I mean, just gaudy numbers as a Ram. Special, 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 special. But he wasn't a Hall of Famer till he did what he did with the Cardinals and turned them around, and he had very, very good years. But he's historically going to remember for that 99 team and the, you know, the greatest show on turf, because the Cardinals, even when the, you know, when he took them to the Super Bowl, they were the worst playoff team in history of the game. And it was really on his shoulders that they were even able to do that. And the next year they followed it up, had that memorable, memorable game in the playoffs. But, you know, he's a Hall of Famer because of what he did with the Cardinals, but he is in NFL lore because of his time with the Rams.
Right. And I think, you know, his place in history is really going to be tough because his career isn't great when you just look at it overall, but his highs were just so good. I mean, his 5 or 6 years were just special. And like you said, that's what made him a Hall of Famer, because, you know, if he just has those four-year run with the Rams, he's just, you know, a great 4-year run, but adding those 2.5 extra years with the Cardinals made him, like you said, that Hall of Famer.
The game that was played getting ready for the Hall of Fame festivities was between the Dallas Cowboys and the Arizona Cardinals. The question was posed on Twitter is, you know, how did the Rams feel that the Cardinals got to do that because of Kurt Warner? Because obviously there was something to do with the fact that the Cardinals had Kurt Warner and the Cowboys had Jerry Jones, so that they were represented. You know, a little known fact is when Michael Bidwill talked about getting the Hall of Fame game, it was in part because the Cardinals were up for it. They were willing to do it because of the Metallica concert, which would have conflicted with the beginning of training camp. And so it was a good way to solve their stadium conflict at the same time, you know, get some extra work for especially what turned out to be in the summer of Blaine Gabbert is what we might be calling this summer, because that's what we're going to talk about first, the summer of Blaine Gabbert, where they sign him and they want to give him work, because as you know and you listeners have heard me say, everything that I've seen and I've seen written and that I've heard said points to the fact that the Cardinals really believe Gabbert is a 2018 option for something. And they are grooming him as such. So the extra preseason game, you know, having him as a number three, giving him those extra reps, all that extra time off for Carson Palmer, it all points to, hey, we think there's something in this Gabbert kid. And it's becoming the summer Blaine Gabbert. So we're going to start with this. And this is the Blaine Gabbert, the summer Blaine Gabbert parts, where we talk about his play in the Hall of Fame game. Now, Seth, What did you think of this game? Because if you recall, what we said last week is that he should look like the best player on the field because he's going to be going against backups with backups. And guess what? Did he not do exactly what he was supposed to do?
He did, and that was kind of what we wanted to see. And I don't know how much you saw of my tweeting, you know, because you were busy doing the tweets as well. We all were doing the tweets. but, you know, there's definitely some animosity may not be the right word, but you're definitely not going to be appreciated if you're tweeting out positives on Blaine Gabbert. Now, neither you nor I have ever once proclaimed Gabbert to be, you know, the guy moving forward or anything of that nature. But we are, I think, at least both of us are very good at tweeting out basically what is happening and giving effective information and not letting anything kind of dictate what is said. And so on Thursday night, I want to say Saturday because they usually play that game on Saturday, but on Thursday night, I thought we both did a nice job of that on Twitter and talking about, oh, you know, Gabbert did this well. Okay, he struggled here. You know, I got some flack for criticizing him on that pass that was incomplete to Andre Ellington on third down. And I said the problem wasn't that Ellington dropped it. It was that he got hurried. And all of a sudden, instead of hitting his running back in the chest and giving him a chance to run after the catch, he's throwing the ball down around his ankles. And if Ellington makes that catch, it doesn't even matter. So what we continue this useless, oh, he's, you know, perfect for the game on a third and 10 play where he threw it 5 yards. Like it was a bad throw. It was a bad decision. It was one of the two plays where you go, okay, there's the Blaine Gabbert you worry about. But for the most part, you have to be, I would say, excited about what he did. I thought he showed poise. I thought he showed good arm strength. I thought he showed the ability to push the ball down the field as needed. I definitely think that there are two things in the negative that I now have questions about that I didn't before. But overall, I think a lot of positives have to have come from this in what you saw from him.
Well, and for me, I really enjoyed watching some. They became clutch throws, and so he had some, you know, the easy underneath throws, the short throws, but on three different third down plays. You know, you have the Ifeanyi Moma play, you've got the Britton Golden play, you've got the Troy Nicholas play. They were money throws, and what I enjoyed about this is at least two of them wouldn't have been his number one read. Now, obviously, the plays happened quick enough that he left his first read rather quickly, but the arm talent, because I didn't watch a lot of Blaine Gabbert. I'll be honest, I haven't watched much of, because most of what I saw of Blaine Gabbert were low lights of him, you know, ducking and falling
Those are just career highlights. That's just.
But I am so impressed at the arm talent. Watching him in practice, he makes some throws that, you know, I've been impressed since Carson Palmer's been here, and you've been able to see a notable difference when Carson Palmer's throwing the ball to even Drew Stanton, and then of course, you know, all the other guys that they've been in and out of the locker room since then, but. But when you look at what Palmer does and what Gabbert does, their arm talent is very similar. Gabbert's got the better arm, in my opinion, but Palmer does have more elite ball placement. And that's not taking anything away from Gabbert, because when Gabbert has time, he's the throw to Nicholas and the throw to Golden were beautiful throws, which gives you a lot of hope for what he can do when he is not under duress. Now, again, under duress. He had the bad, you know, the poor, the less than ideal throw to Ellington. He had the scramble back and fumble, which was, oh, Gabbert's going to Gabbert. But you see everything wrapped around that, and you have a lot of positives, because I'm convinced, and I told you, and I've said on the show several times, he's going to be on this team this year unless something drastic happens. And we said, going into last, he should shine. He should have been the best player on the field, and he should look like it, and he did. He took control of that offense. He moved the ball right down the field, and even though he didn't throw touchdown passes, he made key third down throws, and he didn't ruin things for the team. Was he perfect? No, but, you know, Carson Palmer makes mistakes. He sometimes throws the ball or you know, makes a bad read. And even that very last throw he made, it was a question. I mean, it was thrown in an area that could have gotten picked off. But even still, there's positive. So you're thinking, okay, we're going to keep the Gabbert train rolling. It's still the summer of Blaine.
Well, and I thought the last throw was just one of those where that's where he's got to – understand the situation, and that the defense knows he's looking for that kind of deep out. And I think that's another nuance that we're just not ready yet for on Gabbert is situational football and situational understanding. You know, he took those two throws over the middles. Those weren't bad ideas because they had timeouts. And then he got to that spot where they didn't have a timeout. So then he kind of just locked on Krishan Hogan. Like if you go back and watch it, he literally takes the snap, turns his head to Krishan Hogan and doesn't stop looking at him. Like that's a play where he's either got to know the situation. He's got to look towards whoever the wide receiver was on the right side and then come back to Hogan, or he needs to look towards Hogan and then see if something opens up kind of deep over the middle to take a shot and see if he could possibly score a touchdown there. But overall, I thought it was fine. I think, though, the thing that I saw that was concerning moving forward, and that's considering all the good, and you know, if he continues to play at a good level, the one concerning thing I took from this, and Collinsworth pointed it out on the – I watched the replay of it, and Collinsworth pointed it out too, is his release is kind of slow. And that's something that Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer have really done a nice job of as their arm strength waned towards the end of their career, was they still had that release that got rid of the ball. And, you know, as soon as their back foot hit, they were already making the throw. And he's kind of got an elongated release. Now, my question was, and I'd have to go back and watch, but a lot of the Jags and San Francisco film is just so awful. It's hard to, quite honestly, it's just hard to get through. But I wonder if that is something new as he's trying to focus on driving the ball and really pushing the ball vertically in Arians' offense, or if that's always been there. But I don't know if you saw the Collinsworth. They did a couple of those PFF, you know.
The wind up to the time to throw was like 3.22 seconds. Yeah, although it's almost sounded like with the matches they were talking about Blaine Gabbert that the announcing team had bought into the summer of Blaine Gabbert theme.
Exactly. And so that was the one, I think, out of all the positives, and like I said, you take those forward and you're happy with those. I think that was the one thing that I'm like, okay, is this a problem? Because I honestly, like I said, I honestly haven't looked at it close enough to know if it's a problem, because let's be honest, I never thought he would be on the Cardinals, and I didn't think he'd be kind of competing to be the quarterback of the future. So I've seen the film. I guess I just haven't seen or paid attention enough of the film to really see what that has. So that might be something that I need to go back and watch and see if maybe it is a consistent thing where he does have that elongated windup, and that's just his play, which – could excuse me, could explain some of the accuracy issues that you kind of talked about. Like when he has the time to plant and throw, he's perfect. But when he is a little rattled, things go a little haywire. And maybe that's why, because the elongation of his throwing motion. Not to bore everybody, sorry.
Right. Well, but in fairness, we see some of the same issues with Carson Palmer too, which the same type of thing. That's why it's critical that he be protected. Now, moving forward, it's really, really interesting to me. Now, in part, this is just simply because of the situation, but the Cardinals have it set up for Blaine Gabbert to absolutely be successful because he's going to be playing against, for lack of a better word, I know it's a very, but in terms of the guys he'll be playing with will be non-NFLers for the most part. So he plays against who he starts, but he's playing against second teamers. He looks good. This weekend against the Raiders, he's going to play the second half with third stringers. He's going to be playing against third stringers and guys who will not be on any NFL roster. So again, provided that the offensive line is not awful, because, you know, as we saw with Trevor Knight out there, instead in the second half is that, you know, things get dicey for both teams and you never know what to expect. But with a guy with the experience of Gabbert and with the talents of Gabbert, he should impress again. And it will be enough, I think, throughout the preseason that the talk of him taking Drew Stanton's job will not go away, even though Drew Stanton's job really is in no jeopardy.
Right. And I think it's something that you kind of want to see. You want to see him continue to push Stanton, because then maybe, you know, we'll see better play out of everybody. But you and I kind of talked about it off the air. I think a lot of this year is just setting up for next year. If Carson Palmer does decide to retire, that they have in place guys in both Stanton and Gabbert to kind of fight it out to the death for that starter position.
Moving forward, here is a quote that really makes me believe more than anything is a long game. This is a long-term thing that they're saying. This is Steve Keim. The thing I'm excited about is when you take a chance on a player and you really don't have expectations, but you feel like the risk to the reward is certainly worth it. Blaine, to me, is a guy who has great skill. And it's just one of those things where I think he needs to stay in the same system, and he's got to be coached by the same people, and he's got to get the concepts down of the offense, and I think he's got a chance. Oh, he's had the change every single year. Went like that. That's saying, oh yeah, he's going to be here. He's going to be here because he needs to stay in the same system. So he's going to be on this team this year, again, barring a complete, you know, implosion.
Yeah, and that's why I said there's three games left, because you and I are hypothesizing that he is not going to play the fourth game overall.
It'll be the Trevor Knight show.
And it'll be
a terrible show.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of T Knight. Poor T Knight. But
and Elijah Penny.
Oh, goodness. I, you know, not to get off track, but I really thought he was going to play, and he didn't look good. Neither of us put him down as, you know, kind of a guy that we weren't impressed with, but I don't know why I expected more out of him, and I just didn't think he looked good in the game. But yeah, the Trevor Knight, Elijah Penny show, if it's as bad as both of them played in game one, huh, that's going to be a tough watch on a Thursday night.
Maybe we'll see a James Summers, maybe. No one has said one word about him at all. I don't think Bruce Arians even knows who he is. You don't see him taking reps in practice. He's never mentioned him when he talks about the running backs. And he didn't even, I don't think he saw the field on Thursday, did he?
No, and that's the thing with him is he's transitioning in his – he's in his third transition year. I think it was – he was a quarterback to a wide receiver.
Oh, that's right.
To now he's a running back. Or, no, it was a quarterback to running back. Yeah, so he's in his – so he's in only his second year as a running back. He wasn't – you know, a special athlete by any means. I mean, these guys are all special athletes. You know, they're more athletic than Jess or I could ever hope to be. But in the scope of NFL athletes, he wasn't a special athlete by any means. I wouldn't be shocked if he's the type of guy that they kind of just slow play and then cut and then re-sign to the practice squad to kind of see what they have in him, a la what they did with Elijah Penny last year. Especially if they aren't happy with Penny. And I'm not saying they're not, but I'm just from game one, it wasn't the greatest play from him.
So we're going to talk about the game now. So coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we're done with the summer of Blaine Gabbert. And as much as I like talking about Blaine Gabbert, cause it's kind of fun. We're done with Blaine Gabbert. We're going to talk up next. We're going to talk about the things we liked and the things we didn't like about the game last week. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We're going to talk about the things we liked and things we didn't like from the game last week against the Dallas Cowboys. So both Seth and I have picked two things we liked. We're not going to talk about everything. Two things we liked and two things we didn't like. So let's start with, for me, and these are some of the things. My first thing that I liked was overall, the way they came out, the overall intensity that the Hall of Fame starters, Hall of Fame game starters did, meaning the second team, so guys that are likely going to be on the team, the way they came out and played with urgency. I was most impressed with that. They looked good offensively early, and they looked good defensively. And things after that kind of fell apart, but when you take a 15-0 lead after two possessions by each team, that's exactly what you want to see the team to do. And that's the sort of thing that they didn't do last preseason and that caused them trouble in the regular season because they just weren't in rhythm. This gives me optimism to see what the starters do this weekend because you want to see the team look more – you want to see the guys on the field first look able and not disinterested.
I think you wanted to see that sense of urgency because they were so lethargic last year, and we still have fears of that kind of looming in our mind. And so to see them play with that intensity and come out and seem to have a more of a, you know, edge on them to start the game, they really, I mean, you're going to talk about it, but they really did a nice job kind of setting the tone on that first drive. Blaine Gabbert made a couple nice throws, but the tone was set in the running game. And I thought that was a lot of fun to see and something that was kind of, okay, maybe, you know, obviously it's the second, third team. Obviously David Johnson's not out there. And, you know, guys that are going to be contributing on Sundays weren't out there, or not contributing, but taking up the bulk of the snaps on Sundays weren't out there, but it just looked like a different mindset and game plan. And it looked like they came out with an attitude.
What was your number one like from what you saw in that game?
I really liked what I saw out of Cole Toner. He continues to be a guy that, you know, surprisingly, he's still not strong, or maybe not surprisingly, right? You know, he's always been kind of overworked in terms of being a big dude, but he's always seems to be in the right position. He always seems to have the ability to turn and drive, not and get his man out of the hole and create a running lane for the running back. And I thought he did a really nice job. And, you know, it's kind of dumb to say, but we know he's smart, you know, a Harvard grad. So we know he's a smart guy. But to see him excelling after he did a really nice job last year at several positions, and now he's excelling as a center. And you have to, I mean, I think you have to be excited with what he gives you in terms of being the guy that's going to go all over the line, right? Like he's going to be your spot starter. He's going to be the guy that comes in and fills in at guard or center and maybe even tackle. And he's going to, and to see him perform well right out of the get-go, his first real game at center was a lot of fun.
And it's one of two things. You either see him as perhaps a better version of Earl Watford, or if we're thinking maybe even more optimistically, perhaps that Evan Bame really isn't their center of the future. And maybe that's Toner. Maybe they could see that happening with Bame holding down and continuing to play guard. And then if, you know, maybe Toner and Shipley battle it out next year, or they ride with Shipley because he's got the 2-year deal. And Toner then is set to compete maybe with Bame in year three, while they have Dorian Johnson and or Will Holden, who can handle either the guard. I mean,
Holden was playing mostly at guard, wasn't he, yes, in this game?
Yes, that's where he's been doing most of his stuff in the preseason. For whatever reason, maybe that's for flexibility this year to see what he can do in terms of position flexibility. I mean, he's built like a tackle.
He's 6'7" and like 320. It's not like so. It'll be interesting what happens with these young guys, because we've talked about this. Is they have five intriguing young offensive linemen that are all backups. So who gets these four jobs, right? And I feel like Toner's a lock at this point.
Yeah,
I don't see any way he's not. And then you have John Wetzel, and then they really like Ulrich John and what he's done. And then you obviously have Holden and Dorian Johnson. So, you know, how do they do it? Who do they cut? It still feels like it's Ulrich John, but I mean, and it is just week two, but he's still listed on the second team, while Johnson and Holden, Dorian Johnson and Holden are on the third team. So I guess, I mean, we're, I don't know.
Yeah, that's going to be, I mean, Johnson's a guy you feel like it would be a wasted pick if he doesn't make the team. Holden, I always thought, is a guy who potentially could be a cut and practice squad guy. But then again, Ulrich John could easily be a practice squad guy as well, because that's what he was last year until the Cardinals picked him up.
Right.
So what was your number two? What was your number two that positive?
Cap Cappy. At first I thought it was Jarvis Jones. I was like, man, Jarvis Jones looks way more athletic than he used to be. And I had to get my roster out, because I'm like, there's no way Jarvis Jones is wearing 43 or whatever Cappy wears. I can't even remember right now.
I think he's like 42, I think.
Yeah, like some odd cut number, like a number that's not going to make the team, because that's what they give those guys a lot of time, right? And yeah. And I was like, who is – and so I was like, no, that's not Jones. And so then I was looking up who it was, and it was Cap Cappy. And I'm like, man, he looks like a little Marcus Golden. Like, he's just a relentless, you know, dog out there that just – he wants that bone, and he's not going to give up until he reaches it. And I don't think he had a sack. I mean, he didn't do a ton statistically, but – he was playing with his hair on fire, and he's one of those guys that kind of jumped off the film at you. And I think this team needs a fourth outside linebacker, and I don't know if Kareem Martin's a lock to make this team. So Cappy playing well, maybe he's fighting for that, you know, fourth outside linebacker spot, because we know, I shouldn't say we know, but it feels like it'd be really hard for Jarvis Jones not to make this roster, doesn't it?
You'd think so, yeah. I mean, that's I felt all along that the trust level that they have in him, even though with the injuries there seems to be some concern, but the way they signed him, basically giving him exactly what they were going to give Alex Okafor, said, they wanted him on the team, and that's what they wanted. And so it would be a, I think it'd be a big upset. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but it would be very shocking to me if Jones isn't on the team. So yeah, it becomes Curry Martin. But by the way, I mean, Bruce Arians has spoken very highly of Curry Martin this camp too. So it's going to be a case of, well, which one do they go with? Is that the position they go with, five in the short? Because I think they're going to go five at inside, but if they do that, they can't go five outside. That wouldn't make any sense.
Unless they just go three cornerbacks.
But then go eight DBs, because they're going to go with four corners.
Or maybe they just go three,
It would be eight DBs, because I've had on my 53, I've had them doing nine DBs.
Yeah.
Basically with Rudy Ford / Harlan Miller, which one of those guys is on the roster is the guy that bounces between, because now we know that basically there's four corner spots, and that's Bethel and Peterson and Williams and Williams. So
maybe they just go with seven D linemen though.
And that's, well, I have them only going with seven. So
yeah, it'll be interesting, because this roster is going to be funny. And, you know, when you look at it, the other guy that I thought played well, and then all of a sudden it all came crashing down, and then more tweets of that today were Scooby Wright. I thought he was playing well when he was able to go downhill and kind of make plays, but then all of a sudden, you know, when the game started getting a little more lateral and he had to start dropping into coverage, you're like, oh, yeah, that's why Scooby Wright went in the seventh round.
Well, and he is exactly what you would want in a two-down linebacker. But those two-down linebackers now are role players. They're role players now because there's so much nickel. And you can't afford to have a guy like – I mean, people talked about Kevin Minter and his coverage issues. He has some athletic ability, and actually his – Pro Football Focus stats, the ones that they keep track, said he was a good covered linebacker last year. Well, that's really not the case, but we take a guy like Kevin Minter, who is athletic, and then you go to a guy like Scooby Wright, who is lacking in some of those athletic numbers. So, I mean, for those expecting a full-time starter, I don't think he was ever going to be that, but he could be adequately on your team a two down guy, a run stuffer, a guy that's, you know, going to make plays on first and second down, but don't expect much from him third down. And you're probably better off with someone else on the field.
Yeah. And so, but you know, I thought overall, I didn't think there was a ton of negatives outside of, you know, who we joked about earlier with Trevor Knight.
And well, yeah, I wouldn't even really talk about that, because if you're talking about the two things we're going to look like dislike, my one other like, that's the play of Buda Baker. We finally got to see some extended action from Hassan Reddick, and we saw some flashes from him, but we also saw
he's definitely
looks new. Yes, he's raw at the position, but Buda knows. I mean, he played instinctively, he played fast, he played physical, and showed the versatility in coverage and in run support that you wanted to see. And, you know, they're talking about pushing the starters. He would have been probably pushing the starters, but now he just jumped into the role that I think he will end up having this year, and that's dime back as your dime safety, kind of the role they had 2 years ago for Justin Bethel when they were trying to find him some playing time. So he will become the sixth defensive back, and they'll have four safeties on the field to go along with their two corners, and that'll be an interesting look. But Buda looked like, and I think he showed everything that the Cardinals were very excited about. And it's just a matter now, is limiting his role just enough so he doesn't screw things up. Because the mental errors, as we've seen, are critical. And as we saw in week one against the Patriots, when Brandon Williams missed the signal to change coverages, and he just lets Chris Hogan run right by him, touchdown, that's the difference in the game.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see Baker kind of making an impact this year, a la what Matthew did as a rookie. They're just so similar. And I just think that they're both, you know, extremely talented, and the way they play fearlessly. It's a lot of fun to watch. And so I think you have to enjoy them while we can, because with those guys, they're so fun to watch, and it's so much enjoyment. And so we'll see kind of what happens there.
The first of the things I did not like, and that would be the punters. You know, it's really nitpicky, but of all the things that the Cardinals wanted to improve with special teams, they went out of the way to, they brought in two punters. And I talked about this. I talked about this as the offseason. The guys that they brought in are risky. Neither one of them have ever won a training camp battle. And we saw it. You had the Matt Wild drop a punt inside the 20. You had the big 52-yarder by Richie Leone, who even with the coverage, I mean, was still a net more than a 40-yard punt, but they both had bad punts, and, you know, a la Drew Butler. And then, you know, remember Bruce Arians talking about the reason why they kept Butler around is because of his holding and because of the backup kicker. They looked terrible as kickers. They didn't do well in the kickoff particularly, and the field goals they missed terribly, which led to a comment today, led to a comment on Tuesday where you know, Arians is not pleased with the inconsistency that they're both competing with, and could given a couple of weeks and they might land someone else. But I mean, what were they expecting when they had a guy who had never won it? One was in the CFL. If you're a good punter, you're not just in the CFL. And you have a guy who was, they picked him up off of, they signed him off the streets after they saw him punt against them.
Right. And the overall situation with the punting thing is just, you know, I made a comment and somebody, I don't know, I wouldn't say they took offense to it, but they kind of were like, well, if you're a contender, like there shouldn't be a special teams budget. But I honestly wondered, like, was the Phil Dawson signing, did that force them to maybe go cheap with their punter situation? Because, I mean, let's be honest. They, like I said, Dawson makes more than all three of their special teamers did last year combined. They didn't want to have a kicking situation. They really, truly all believe that their season turned on three kicks, and that signing Dawson, you know, or having Dawson puts them in the playoffs. And so I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens. It's disappointing that this is happening again, but I guess it's also a positive that this is one of the few like weak positions on the team is punter.
Oh, but, if you saw it, I lit Twitter on fire when I suggested what happens if Drew Butler ends up back with the Cardinals again this year? Twitter lit on fire. Cardinals Twitter was like, no, you can't even mention that name. But, you know, I don't think he would. But the way these guys are punting, why wouldn't they go back to a guy that they're familiar with? That'd be awful.
Exactly. But
it would be awful.
But, we'll see what happens. I don't know. I didn't think that the punting situation was that bad, but I'll tell you this. The one thing I noticed about Leone's kicks, even the one that was the 52-yarder with the 9-yard return, that Buda Baker should have tackled the guy when he caught the ball, he didn't get hang time. And if we know anything about Arians and Amos's special teams thoughts, it's that they want hang time out of their punters.
And Matt Weil, at least in practice, the ball explodes off his foot. It's, you know, if you ever pay attention to punting, stuff like that, it's not one I've done a lot, but one time during practice, I was there and I'm watching him warm up, and it's that the ball was just absolutely exploding off of his foot, which, you know, that's good to see. That's just a matter of whether he can consistently keep it up in the air. For me, my other negative or my other dislike was the depth play of the cornerbacks. Brandon Williams, in my winners and losers of that game, he was a winner, then a loser, then a winner again. It was a roller coaster ride, which we talked about a year ago. Brandon Williams playing cornerback is a roller coaster. He's going to show some positives, which he broke up the one pass. He's showing some progress by actually getting his head around and making a play on the ball. He was penalized twice. He was beat deep, beat over the top. And then he had a very nice interception in the end zone, albeit on a ball that was poorly thrown. So, I mean, there were positives or negatives, but then Harlan Miller got, I mean, his concern about his speed, it was in full effect. And you saw him get beat there. There was a little bit of, I mean, Jarrell Carter, a guy they brought in the last week, I've never heard of him. He showed some promise, but overall, as much as the Cardinals are talking about, okay, we're comfortable with what we have at cornerback, especially since they've got Justin Bethel playing at a very high level right now and Tremont Williams, who is very capable of playing at a high level, you don't want that depth tested because obviously the talent beyond Brandon Williams, and obviously when you have a 34-year-old like Tremont Williams, you'd like to have some other younger depth that appears to be talented. And so I'm concerned. I didn't like that. I know you had a couple other things. I think the one negative, obviously, is probably the most obvious one. What would that be?
TJ Logan's an injury. I mean, that was just disappointing because you could see that this kid was going to be a difference maker in the return game. He looked completely out of sorts fielding punts, but as soon as the ball got in his hands, however it ended up in his hands, he was going to make a play with it. You could see he was visibly upset when Jeremy Ross told him not to run out the kick that he downed in the end zone after one of the Cowboys' touchdowns. It's just disappointing that the Cardinals lost that element that was going to be a clear upgrade in 2017. I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised, but I'm hopeful that, you know, knock on wood, no other injuries occur and he can be their designated to return guy. But let's be honest, that's asking a lot for a rookie return man to get that designation, right? So that was really disappointing. I think the other disappointing thing was outside of the guys we know, the wide receiver play. You know, where were these young guys that we've been waiting to see? Where were these young guys that we were hoping would flash, you know, in the game? You had Ifeanyi Moma, the tight end, as the leading receiver. Britton Golden made a big play.
Chad Williams had that really good route where he came in, spun out of it, and went. That was very nice.
Yeah, and so I thought that was kind of the highlight. Krishan Hogan had one, you know, kind of long catch. But overall, I thought, you know, Marquise Bundy had two catches for 34 yards, but he had the drop on the slant play. I was just underwhelmed. Chris Hubert lost the ball in the lights that was thrown out of bounds.
I mean, in fairness, it wouldn't have mattered anyway.
Because, right, that the announcer said, right. Oh, I think he lost it in the lights. I said, no, I think
it was just the throw was awful.
You know, Agudosi, he just looked like a guy. Like and I get that they're counting on Larry
Fitzgerald. And Larry Clark got cut.
Right, exactly. They're counting on Larry Fitzgerald. They're counting on John Brown. They're counting on J.J. Nelson. But I was just hoping that in all the time that all these guys were going to get, that somebody would kind of step up. Like Moma has the last couple years in the preseason before he got injured. So I will say that Troy Nicholas had a nice catch, so that was good to see. But overall, I was just kind of left wanting when it came to the wide receiver situation.
That'll wrap up talking about the Hall of Fame game. So we've got the positives, we've got the negatives. Coming up next on Rise of Sea Red, we're going to talk about what we're looking forward to in the game this weekend against the Oakland Raiders. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're coming up next. We're back on Rise Up, See Red, and then we're not going to only talk about the two things we want to see this weekend. We're also going to talk. We're going to talk as well about some of the position updates. But let's talk about what we want to see this weekend before we get into the position. So, two things you want to see this weekend, and two that I want to see this weekend against the Raiders. I've got two in particular individual matchups, and maybe I stole. Hopefully I didn't steal this from you. But number one, I want to see the matchup with DJ Humphries at left tackle going against Khalil Mack. That, to me, is the one thing. You know, if DJ is going to be the truly good left tackle, he's got to handle in some way, maybe not win every time, but he needs to handle Khalil Mack, who is the reigning defensive player of the year and just amazing, you know, everything.
And I really hope DJ's healthy.
Yeah. He's been
dealing with that, hamstring or something, and then John Brown's got a quad. Those are both things I would like to see this weekend. But the first thing I want to see this weekend is I want to see just a little life to the first team. I don't want to see a touchdown. I don't want to see a big play. I just want to see a little life, a little cohesion, you know, a little ball movement. That's all I want to see. I you know, like I said, I don't need to see a bomb to John Brown. I don't need to see DJ break off an 85-yard run. I just want to see that, you know, a 10-play drive down maybe for a field goal, and then they don't even have to come back out. Like, I just want to see a well-executed drive by the first team. And honestly, I mean, this is stupid and it won't happen, but if that was to happen, I wouldn't even play him the rest of the preseason because you need those guys so badly. Maybe the offensive line, but I would wrap Palmer, Fitzgerald, and Johnson in bubble wrap and just sit them on the sideline the rest of the season or the preseason.
And for me, number two is another individual that I want to see, and that's Justin Bethel. Bruce Arians came out on Tuesday, said if he continues to do what he's been doing, he's going to have, this is the word, a great season. He's poised to do it. They've talked about for years the talent he has, and he's healthy. I want to see that first live action against another team. And, you know, Oakland has talented receivers. So how does he do? Does he get embarrassed? I mean, does he make plays, and how does he look if he gives up a play? Because that's been the biggest thing, at least Arian said, his body language has improved tremendously. And he's starting to develop that mentality of a cornerback who, you know, gives up something now. I'm going to win the next one.
Yeah. And that's always been his issue, is that as soon as one thing goes bad, you know, he's going to have a crappy game. Like, he's a guy that has always been, if he starts fast, he can win, you know, in fast. But as soon as he gives up one play, it's going to be downhill. And as a cornerback, you can't do that. You know, you have to be arrogant. You have to be arrogant like Patrick Peterson. You have to be arrogant like Richard Sherman. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way, that you believe like, oh, that guy didn't beat me. Do it again. I dare you. Like, that, it has to be an arrogance of that didn't just happen. I'll prove it. Like, do it again right now. Let's go, you know, type of thing. And he just never had that. He's always kind of been, you know, like you said, the body language has always been kind of like, oh, shucks, I messed up again. You know, here they go. And it's going to be all my fault type thing. And you don't want that, especially at a cornerback. You know, quarterback and cornerback are probably the two positions that you can't have that mentality. And so, yeah, I'm with you on Bethel. It's going to be exciting to finally see him this preseason. I know he wouldn't have played this week, but it's going to be fun to see him against a talented wide receiver group that Oakland has. The other guy I'm interested in watching, and I really, really hope he gets some reps on the first team against maybe the best offensive line in the NFL, and that's Robert Kimdiche. We want to talk about Blaine Gabbert playing against competition that's probably below his level. The same can absolutely be said for Kimdiche on Thursday. He looked like the best player on the field when he was out there. You know, again, it didn't really show up in the stat sheet, but you saw it overall, and he looked like a man amongst boys. And I thought that was a really important first step. And now the second step is you get to go up potentially against the best offensive line in the NFL. So you get to go up against, you know, Gabe Jackson, Rodney Hudson. You get to go up against those guys and kind of see what you have, and if it continues to translate, can you win those one-on-one situations, and can you be that disruptive force again? I know that all of ours were kind of first-team guys and guys that are expected to contribute, but I think for both of us, that's just because there's questions. Maybe not about the first team offense, but there's everybody else we listed. There's a question. There's a slight concern, if you will, about that player and whether they are really going to click.
And truthfully, normally in preseason game one, those are the same type of things. Like a year ago, preseason game one, we'd be saying that, but this year's preseason game one was no starters. So we haven't seen them other than in practice. And as we saw with a guy like Brandon Williams a year ago, going up against Michael Floyd every single play is different than going up against real receivers who, you know how to run their routes or where to line up or and things like that. Not to disrespect the talent of Floyd, but his season...
And I've talked about it before. Like corners typically have an advantage in those drills and those situations because of the defense knows the routes they're running. They're able to kind of cheat and jump routes and cut their coverages short when they know a route's coming back and they'll know when a guy's going deep, so they won't be sitting on a double move and things like that. So it made sense that Brandon Williams looked good last year and then looked completely lost once the game started because all of a sudden he didn't know what to look for. And so that's understandable. And so now, like you said, I think it's fair that you question, not question's probably the wrong word, but you want to see the Bethel that is being touted. You want to see the DJ Humphreys that so much is resting on his shoulders. You want to see Robert Kimdiche really continue to grow and be that disruptive force because, you know, they've done it all summer. They've done it all training camp. And then, you know, for Kimdiche, he did it in the first game. But it's still kind of – there's still those questions. Like, okay, can these guys really do it when it matters? Can they really do it when the lights come on? And consistently. And like you said, Khalil Mack, Amari Cooper or Michael Crabtree, and then the interior offensive line for the Raiders. Like, honestly, there's not a better, you know, little test for the three guys that we're interested in than the Raiders and what the Raiders will present on Saturday. And hopefully we see it. Like, that's the other thing is this is the Raiders' first preseason game. Who knows what they're going to do.
Right. And as we kind of wrap things up, we've touched on these, the positions of where there's kind of competition, at cornerback, it's going to come down to Justin Bethel and Tremont Williams. Justin Bethel is in position to win that battle as of right now. Obviously, Tremont Williams is very experienced, been a starter pretty much his entire career. Do you see that changing? Do you see that competition changing at all, or is Bethel going to hold on to that job? And because now with the Tremont Williams, if Bethel wins the competition, fans should feel much more confident than had he just beat out Brandon Williams, who Cardinals fans are kind of, I think, done with in a way at the corner, unfortunately.
You know, I think the second cornerback or third cornerback or, you know, the starting cornerback across from Patrick Peterson, if you will, is a really interesting thing because I think Brandon Williams is the only other true outside cornerback on this roster. And everybody else is a slot corner. When you look at it last year, I talked to Pro Football Focus to make sure this was right. And then I talked to my buddies that do the BR1000 to make sure I had this right. And last year, Bethel was better in the slot. Tremont Williams was better in the slot last year. Obviously, we know about Tyron Matthew. Buda Baker is better in the slot. So you got all these guys that are kind of slot guys that are rotational pieces. And then you have, you know, like you said, Justin Bethel and Tremont Williams really being the guys that you're expecting to make the plays and make that to be that guy as the second corner outside. And so then the question becomes, do either of them get field time? Because are you going to be able to take Buda Baker off the field? So if Williams doesn't beat out Bethel, is he going to be happy just kind of sitting on the bench? Tremont Williams does beat out Bethel, again, like you don't have another really position for these guys because of Baker and Matthew. Now, they'll still get some time. I mean, corners all get time, no doubt. But you're really talking about this competition is – not just about who starts, but it really is about who's going to see the field, because your snaps are going to be sparse as a slot corner on this team.
Because
Buda.
Because all the safeties are going to play.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's why I think this is so much more intriguing than a normal just cornerback two battle where you go, oh, well, one of these guys is just going to be your third or, you know, cornerback or whatever, because they're really not. They're really all of a sudden, at best, the fourth corner. And again, there's a chance that you're going to have Baker and Matthew both in the slot when teams go four wide, and they're going to be the two guys in the slot. So there's a chance that their snaps go from being, you know, an 800, 900, 1,000 snap season guy to 300, maybe 400. So you're talking about a drastic reduction in snaps to whoever the loser is. And so I think that's really going to bring out the best in both of these guys. I would be disappointed if Tremont Williams won. Let's just put it that way.
At punter, we already kind of talked about the fact that neither one is really pulling ahead. They're both very inconsistent.
Why is this still a thing? I just don't understand.
Blaine Gabbert, Drew Stanton, as you know, they're making it sound like, you know, I mean, everyone's pushing the Gabbert train. There's a Gabbert train going, and they want him to be number two. But the Kyman Arian's the guy that matters. The guys that matter are saying, you know, he's got a ways to go. You know, on the back end of the offensive line, pretty much all the other battles are at the back end, which
there are really no battles.
For Cardinals fans, it's one thing, but for people who listen to the show, it might not be all that particularly exciting. So I think we're kind of at, unless there's another area where you think underrated one, I think is the back end of inside linebacker. Now with Alani Fua out, I thought for sure that this Philip Wheeler guy was probably a lock for the roster. Then he got hurt, and so they bring on this Josh Bynes. Scooby Wright was pretty much a lock, but maybe is not. Although Arians hinted at it that, you know, you want your fourth linebacker to be a veteran so that your fifth guy can be young. To me, either Wheeler or Bynes is going to be on the roster and Scooby's going to be their number five because of special teams. But other than that, I mean,
I wonder if they would keep, what's his name? Gooden. Cause he's kind of a veteran too. And then
that's true.
And Scooby. But if you look at the new depth chart that was released, and you have it up today, I have it up going up tomorrow. you know, Wheeler is the second's probably not the right word, but he's the guy after Dansby on the inside. And so, you know, we know that's not going to stay that way. Like, we know that somebody's dropping, but like you said, there, you know, it's Dansby, Buchanan, and Reddick. And then it feels like it, that Wright has a spot on this team as a special teamer and kind of just a junkyard linebacker at times. So then who, like, yeah, who is that fifth guy? Who's the veteran? Is it Wheeler? Is it Gooden? Is it Tynes? Like, who's the guy that, that fills that role? Because again, the hope is those guys aren't really going to play.
Right. And that should do it for this episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us, as always, all over social media. We're featured on Blog Talk Radio, which is where we're hosted, on RevengeOfTheBirds.com. You can find us as CardsWire.com as well. In addition to Facebook, Twitter, and even on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast, you can find us. And it, obviously, you're listening to it now, so thanks. So you obviously found it. Feel free. We will never say no to a 5-star rating on iTunes, so please do that for us if you don't mind. But we're going to wrap up episode 161. Next time we talk, we'll be talking about the real preseason opener for the Cardinals, where this actual starter's playing. On behalf of Rise Up Sea Red, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roots. Go Cardinals, Rise Up Sea Red, and we'll be back again next week.